This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Matt and Brett here today. Hey, Brett, how are you, man?
Hey, all right. How about you?
I'm doing okay. Kind of sad news. Jim Klobuchar. He passing away. Of course, the senator's father, longtime columnist for the Star Tribune. And, yeah, he was a pretty good writer, too. Very entertaining writer. Did you ever read any of his columns?
I don't think I did. When did he stop publishing?
95, I think, was his retirement.
Yeah, that would have been a little before. A little before for me. No, I actually read the paper as a young age.
I read it in the 80s. I remember Klobuchar's byline. Remember him out there. Great guy. There is someone posted a great bit that he did in 81 that apparently – so this is back when Amy Klobuchar, the senator, was a freshman at Yale. And Jim – who apparently was an avid biker, an active guy, flew out there. They got bikes and biked back to Minnesota. They biked back 100 miles a day back to Minnesota.
Wow, that's...
that's impressive.
How long would that take?
Apparently 2 weeks. Took him two weeks.
Okay.
So, you know, 1,400 miles a day, 1,400 miles, and... that sounds about right from Connecticut, from Yale.
And keep in mind, that's a lot to do in one day for 14 straight days. That's a lot of time.
Keep in mind, that was 1981. Mm-hmm. There weren't bike lanes on roads. There weren't that many bike trails back then. You were highway riding. Wow, and he made it.
Yeah, that's actually probably the more shocking part of the story is that they actually made it back unscathed.
That's great. And by the way, just you have to see the picture that goes with the image from this 1981 story of just a young Amy Klobuchar. Just what a cute dad and daughter moment there. That very nice that they did that together.
I'll have to Google this, yeah.
Yeah, it's up and around. A lot of people sending their best. All my best to Senator Klobuchar, her entire family, as well as your loss there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. A lot to get to today. Jeff Stein joining us. I'm going to presume we're going to talk a little Liz Cheney. But I do want to start off today with it's a sad story. Sad story out in, Stillwater. The Minnesota Department of Corrections employee who was recorded on video yelling at protesters in Stillwater is out of a job. Hey, you know that guy, remember him? Sergeant Paul Gorder, 26-year veteran of the Minnesota Department of Corrections, and his wife, Kimberly Beer, not just a name.
Wait, that can't actually be the last name.
It is.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kimberly Beer were recorded on April 25th yelling at protesters who were gathered outside Washington County Attorney Pete Orpett's Stillwater home. The protesters were holding a church service as part of their effort to demand more. A church service, mind you. That's what you're going to go out. You're going to lose it over a church service. They're demanding more serious charges against Kim Potter, the former Brooklyn Center police officer charged in the death of Dante Wright. Orpett's office is prosecuting the case against Potter as per agreement between a few metro area county attorney's offices. According to the videos of protesters on the scene, Gorder verbally abused protesters and Beer called them a racist slur. And a previous protest demonstrator said he called them derogatory names. The day after the incident, the Department of Corrections said it was investigating the incident. Gorder was on investigatory leave, adding the actions and comments do not reflect the values of Minnesota's Department of Corrections, you think? In a statement to Bring Me the News, DOC says its Office of Professional Accountability completed its investigation into the complaints against Gorder, who worked at MSCF Stillwater, and he is no longer employed by the DOC. The Department of Corrections is an agency with more than 4,300 employees whose skills and commitment make Minnesota safer, and I'm very proud the work being done by our staff, DOC Commissioner Paul Schnell said in a statement. That said, when concerns about the conduct of an agency staff member arise, I'm compelled to act in a manner that ensures public trust while ensuring that the employee is afforded all the rights and protections guaranteed by law and their union's collective bargaining agreement. Details on the investigation and any discipline and data documenting of the DOC's actions is not public until it's final, with the DOC noting final disposition for human employees is at the conclusion of the arbitration proceeding sustaining. So that could be a while. Meanwhile, Beer was fired from her job at Fantastic Sam's in Maplewood. Who wants a mullet? Hey, no.
Boy, those conversations have to be fascinating if you're getting your haircut by her.
Let me just, wow. She was fired from her job at Fantastic Sam's in Maplewood in the days following the incident. If I remember correctly, weren't these two, I mean, the story, if I remember correctly, is they were drinking. Or allegedly drinking.
I think she clearly was. It wasn't so clear on him, I think.
There was a smell of alcohol on someone.
Yeah.
And they set up lawn chairs at the end of the driveway to taunt people. Okay, what are you doing? Come on. Just. Do you feel it was worth it now? Do you feel it was worth it now? You both lost your jobs. You know, 26 years in, I mean, say you started working there at 25, it makes you 51. You're still, 12 years away from retirement. Do you have enough money to sustain your house? Do you have enough in investments to be able to retire early? At this point, you got to wonder if the shame and embarrassment of what you've done is going to cause you to have to move. Go someplace else. I mean, obviously, if this guy wants to get another job in corrections, he's probably not going to be able to do it here in the state of Minnesota, so he's going to have to move somewhere. You know, it's... people want to protest, let them protest. And, you know, that's the case. I mean, and they're having a church service, mind you. They're having a church service that you decided to go start screaming about. But, I mean, it's just... I have to admit, that's a little bit of positive news on what has been a really eye-opening day in America. Like I said, I'm going to get into the Liz Cheney story with Stein, along with other things too, including the hearings going on, where Trump's biggest concern about the National Guard being dispersed was to make sure the demonstrators are protected. Seriously. I love you. Go home. Seriously. Wow. What happened today, I want to carry over what Cooligan said at the end of his interview yesterday with Brett, and that he made the point, he said, the goal here of the Republicans is to win in 2022 to throw Biden out of office because they want to take on Kamala Harris as president in 2024. And that's a given. That is an undeniable. They don't care that Biden's going to be popular. They already know they've got at least three news networks in this country who will run that they were justified in doing it. There were still questions about Hunter Biden's laptop. I think this is just the safest bet to do it. They'll do that. But even if, and it would be I got to believe personally it'd be a catastrophic mistake for them because, I mean, Biden is a popular president. And you just throwing out a popular president because he's got the D next to his name is not going to fly over the country. So that if you lose in 2024, Cooligan made the point. He said, well, would they even send electors? I mean, and his point at the end was, and that's the end of democracy. And it is. Take a look at where the Republican Party is today. You're not purging moderates anymore. Liz Cheney's not even a centrist Republican. She's a far right Republican. She is a Wyoming Republican who just basically said that Donald Trump was responsible for what happened on 1-6 and he needs to stop lying about the election. She told the truth. And the truth was too much for these Republicans. That's not a party that's on, you know, a traditional Republican like we've seen ever before. This party has moved far to the right now and is on the verge of a willingness to throw out democracy as we know it. I mean, let's look at 1-6. Look at the way that people today, that in the Republican Party, are trying to validate and downplay the terrorist attack on our Capitol on 1-6. Two Republicans, Gosar and some knucklehead from Georgia today, coming on out and making the argument that, oh, this wasn't really that. There was just a bunch of tourists. I didn't see anything wrong. Tourists defecating throughout the Capitol building, assaulting police officers. 160 Capitol police officers injured by these clowns? And you think that that's just a regular tourist group? You have Kulikin's point, I think, is exactly right. These people are just, they can't win a traditional campaign, a traditional election, but they can't stop themselves from embracing the far right extreme. So if you're not going to pull back and make your platform more appealing to the masses, what can you do? Well, you have pretty much every Republican state is out there currently trying to get rid of any kind of easy voting. They're purposely targeting Democrats and black voters and Native American voters and well, Latino voters to a point. But it's, they feel as if they can win just enough Latino voters to where it doesn't, that's an okay minority group for them. But they're trying to purge as many black voters, Native American voters, and Democrats from the ranks as it possibly can. Because they feel as if that is the only way they can win, is to basically stop as many people from voting as possible. In Michigan today, you have Republicans today putting forward an idea of a fact checker bill that if you dare fact check a Republican, that you get penalized and fined. Not because, and from what I read from the bill, not because it's factual, but what they want to be factual. That basically they could say the sky is orange, and you could bring every weather expert in the planet in there and say, no, the sky is blue. Look, it's blue. And they can say, well, that's your opinion. I'm fining you for daring to correct me. That's what they're writing. They're making it illegal to correct falsehoods. That's what they're trying to do. Last I checked, I think they had 8 co-sponsors on that bill. And a lot of people are shrugging their shoulders as, well, of course, the Supreme Court's going to throw that out on First Amendment issues. But the reality is it doesn't matter. This is a sign of where the Republican Party is at today. The Republican Party is not anything like we've ever seen. It is this extreme far-right, conspiracy theory-driven, delusional make up. They feel as if they can make up the rules and the reality as they go. And if they can't win by democracy, well, then they'll kill the entire thing and just rule as a dictator. And that is who they are. And every one of us should be scared to death. And I don't want to hear this. Well, Matt, Joe Biden didn't do everything I wanted him to do. He's no better. No. Shut up. No, seriously. Shut up. In case you're missing the point, America as a democracy will likely end in 2024 unless 1 major thing happens. I'll share that in a second here. But Gary is in Minneapolis. Let's get Gary's call in here before we go into the break. Hey, Gary.
Good afternoon, man. Thanks for taking me. You know, Humphrey, Hubert Humphrey once said there's always been a strange of fascism in this country. Well, now it's right in our faces. I'll be open. And the government, how they hate government, they hate government health care. Well, they should give up their great government health care they got in the basement of the Capitol. They got the best government health care in the world. So I really get tired of them. And then a couple other things you can do is antitrust. If Biden could do that, break these big corporations up, we need that, like Amazon and Walmart and them. And same with our political financing, government financing, or campaigns would help a lot.
Yeah, Gary, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. Republicans don't care about hypocrisy anymore. They don't care about hypocrisy anymore. They don't. They're willing to destroy the world to stay on the throne. And they realize now that unless they throw democracy out, their party is going to die. But like I said, before... Gary, I said there is one thing that can happen. We'll take a break. Come on back. I'll break that down before we get to Jeff Stein. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. So, what is their one great hope we've got left here to save the country? Because in 2024, this thing's going to die if the Republicans have their way. Well, don't hold your breath. But there is one group of people who could save this country. And let's go back to a different time, 1854. The Whig Party, and we have talked about the death of the Whigs, which was not a good political party. The Whig Party had installed that you had to be pro-slavery to be a Whig. Now, one thing that's very important to understand about the Whigs at this point is that if you're looking for a comparison to a modern political party, this would be more the Democrats. So imagine a Democratic Party in 1854 where all of a sudden, out of the blue, someone said, hey, we're now pro-slavery, and you have to be pro-slavery to be part of the Whig Party. Well, it didn't go over well. And the Democrats of the day, which were the Republicans, left the party en masse. And in 1854 started what was then the Republican Party. And I know the Republicans are like, you're talking about our party. No, your party ceased to exist in that manifest in the 1960s when you basically picked up the Dixiecrats and the party switched. The Democratic Party became the party of civil rights. In equality, you became the party of white power. And that is when that happened. But back then, it was, you know, a party that basically formed where people had walked away and said, enough's enough. We're not going to go down this road. We're not pro-slavery. And that's just that. Their first election, 1856, didn't go too well for them. But then they had a guy named Abraham Lincoln, who, yes, definitely has definitely got a lot of blood on his hands, but at the same time was able to, you know, with the Civil War at least, get the country in the right direction, at least heading towards the right direction in regards to the end of slavery, although thanks to the Reconstruction, things didn't go too well, Jim Crow and all that. Anyway, yeah, it's a bittersweet, but still, I mean, that's what happened. The Whig Party became a pro-slavery party. The people that were in the Whig Party that weren't pro-slavery, which would be basically the equivalent of the Democrats today, said the heck with you, and they went and formed their own party. And then once again, that was the Republican Party. So here you are today, and today we learned that the Republican Party today has made a definitive stand the same way the Whigs did back then in 1854, which was that you had to be pro-slavery back then. This time, though, what has been clearly expressed is that to be part of the Republican Party, you have to be Trump uber alles. That Trump's lies about the election are true, that Trump is still the president, that the insurrection didn't really happen, that this is the new Republican Party. And if you don't agree with it, well, then we'll show you the door. The problem is this. Back in 1854, the people who were alienated by the Whigs went out and started their own party. Today, the moderate Republicans, and I will say this without a doubt in my mind, if the moderate Republicans said, the hell with you guys, we're done, formed a brand new party, and presented it as a moderate Republican Party, not only would that party immediately gain an insane amount of traction, because I once again, take a look. We talked about that rally they had down in Albert Lea for that woman on the far right, and they brought all the far right people on out. They had like 150 people or something like that. That was it. This is a fringe. These people that are pushing this Trump uber alles Republican Party, they're not the majority. And if the moderate Republicans realize that they actually have all the power, they would leave, take the vast majority of the donors with them, take a good chunk of the Republican Party with them as well. And not only that, but if they did that now and they got onto ballots in as many of these states as they possibly could, my guess is the moderate Republican Party would actually have more seats than the Republican Party at the end of the 2022 election. And that would cause this Trump uber-allist Republican Party to have a come-to-Jesus moment and realize their ideas of destroying democracy are just not going to happen. The problem here is that back in the 1850s, the people that left the Whigs were basically the modern equivalent of the Democrats with some integrity. So, with some integrity. The problem here is that the moderate Republican Party, I don't think it's going to happen because, frankly, I just think there are too many coward Republicans that they don't realize they're not part of a political party that doesn't represent them anymore. They're part of a pro-Trump lunacy bin. But because they're still, well, I'm against budget deficits. Well, okay, fine. Trump made them worse. Why are you still there? It takes courage to make that next step, to go on out there and say, you know what? I am done. We are going to form our own political party. And not like the Independent Party that was here in Minnesota, where the Independence Party basically was just a bunch of Republicans. And the minute that basically their party imploded because of their bad management, they shrugged their shoulders and went back to the Republicans. No, you have to be committed. And I frankly just don't think the moderate Republicans are. So today, when you factor all this in, it's a little concerning when you realize that there's a very decent chance that democracy in America might end here in 2024. And I just don't have any faith that anyone outside of the moderate Republicans getting a spine and starting their own third party is going to stop it. Jeff Stein will join us when we do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert, your noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books. Make a fantastic Memorial Day gift. Also, you can find him over at totallyiowa.com, the Iowa Business Report, a daily show he does down there in Iowa, along with the Iowa Politics Report from KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff.
You know the sound, the only sound that's better than hearing that music is the sound of your voice behind the microphone. Oh, how are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. It's going to be a bit of a path here, but thank you. It's good to hear your voice as well today. We got to start with your thoughts on the Liz Cheney thing. I mean, I think the funniest damn thing I have heard in a long time was McCarthy this week saying, "We are a party of open ideas. We are the party of a party of free thought." And yet, we're going to get rid of Liz Cheney because she dares go against our great Uber Lord. And I think that is just insane.
They certainly have the right as a party to determine who their party leadership should be, period, right? So she can make the comments she wants. If she is making them as a representative of Wyoming, then those voters have the chance to decide if that works for them in 2022. So it's not inconsistent to say she should be able to speak her mind. It's also not inconsistent to say that the House GOP caucus should say, we don't want you representing the bulk of us. But here's the problem with it. The Republicans, to some degree, can't get out of their own way, and this was another example of it. Because look at the attention that Liz Cheney has gotten in the past week, 10 days, since this latest attempt to oust her came to the forefront. If they don't want to raise this issue and have it get publicity, then maybe you should not be creating such a stir. Because here's the thing that they wound up doing, the Republicans, by forcing her out. You now have the presidential press secretary talking about it. You have Nancy Pelosi talking about it. And what they're doing is pointing out that there's nothing to see here in 2020. The guy who lost is a spoil sport at best, if not borderline terrorist at worst. And so what the Republicans did was give the Democrats a club to beat them with. Now, if you know, what I have said to people who have concerns about the election, is it a Trump concern or an election concern? Because they're two very different things. There's not going to be a change in the White House. Donald Trump is not coming back unless he wins in 2024. So if you want to say you want to examine elections, that's one thing. But the Democrats, it serves their purpose to combine it into one issue in the narrative, and the Republicans are doing nothing but helping them do it, Matt.
Let's go back to Reagan. And towards the end of Reagan's term, he had Iran-Contra. There were plenty of Republicans that were upset with him because they saw exactly what was going on. And so there was some criticism, and people forget that when Reagan left office, I think his approval rating was like 32. That was a reclamation project by the Republican Party to turn him into the icon that he became. But he basically, because of Iran-Contra, he really damaged his reputation towards the end. And there was no bludgeoning of the Republicans who dared speak ill of great Ronnie at that point. It was just Iran-Contra, you should be able to criticize this. What happened to Liz Cheney is not a policy issue. She didn't vote against a tax bill, or she didn't, vote to keep abortion legal or anything. This was clearly a vote against her because she did not pledge loyalty to Donald Trump and criticized him justifiably for January 6th and the big lie, this idea that the election was stolen from him. And that is a very different path now. I was talking about this before you came on the air. The Republican Party is in a very far right, weird state right now where it seems like, you know, they're the bitter ex-boyfriend, whether you'll either like us one way or we're going to force you to like us. And it seems like that's kind of where they're at right now.
It's a tough place to be. They made their bed, if you will. But here's what a lot of it is. Look, the Bush-Cheney type of Republicans, that we used to call them country club Republicans, I think. The ironic part is that they lost their party at the hands of a guy who actually owns country clubs. I don't know. I found that when I figured that out today. I found it interesting. But the point is, they're saying we want our party back. you lost your party because you weren't responsive to it. So it's not like if you get rid of Bad Orange Man, the party is going to welcome you back. And so now you got Bad Orange Man. He's not going away. I'm not entirely sure he's going to run in 2024.
Oh, he's not going to run. I don't think he wants anything to do with the White House again.
He wins this way, though, right? Because he can be the guy sitting out there, and he can have everybody pay attention to him. So it's sad. I agree with you. I'm not sure that he's going to run because of the fact that who needs the aggravation? He gets the adulation through a certain bunch of supporters on this side. So you just know it's a fight within the party, and those who are currently in the Congress, like the McCarthys and Scalises of the world, they think their best way to move forward and retake the House is to double down on the Trump voters. Nothing more complicated than that, but there are repercussions. If you then double down, what if he goes off and says something goofy again? What if voters rise up because they interpret something he says in a certain way? If this is not a winning strategy in 2022, all right, you just bet on the wrong horse. If it is a winning strategy in 2022, be careful what you wish for, because now you've emboldened this guy as you lead toward 2024, whether he runs or not. So it's a tough position for these Republicans who have aspirations, because they don't have a good choice other than the moral choice, and that may send them packing.
Here's where one thing I'll disagree with you on a little bit, or may I just clarify. I look at where we're at with this party right now. Go back to the 2004 election. Bush had lost the blue collar workers. He was desperate to stay in office. Kerry was coming at him strong. And Rove and Cheney welcomed in people that were never allowed to be part of the Republican circle. The extremist far-right Christians, the militias, the racists. Those people were welcomed in as foot soldiers. And yeah, it paid off. They won. But back then, they were saying, well, this is the end of the Republican Party. 4 years later, Sarah Palin out of nowhere becomes their nominee. And then it kind of gets worse from there. Ironically, it was Cheney himself trying to preserve that second term for W that basically set the things in motion which have led us to this point right now.
Well, and I like that analysis. And what it proves is, in a very broad way, the arrangements, the deals, the handshakes that you make now to serve short term, you're going to have to live with them long term. I mean, truly, what do you have if you have, I'm going to say mainstream Republicans, for lack of a better phrase, you have mainstream Republicans who don't want anything to do with Trump, but they do want something to do with getting reelected. Do they say, look, the president had his time, we need to move on? Do they risk alienating that part of a very strong base? You know, it takes a pretty principled person to do that. Now, is Liz Cheney that person? Here's the problem I have with some of her statements. Again, you go back to, they've got kind of a little family blood feud thing going on here. And so she may not be the best messenger, because some of the motives may not be pure. But how many people did you see, Matt, in that caucus rally to her defense besides Adam Kinzinger? That's about it.
Joni Ernst. Joni Ernst, well, on the Senate side, but Joni Ernst did actually stand up for her yesterday.
She did, and did again today. And it's a lot easier. And again, Senator Ernst is on my program regularly. She's coming back next week.
Name drop.
Unless I say something now that could prevent that is where I was going, but yes. But here's the.
So she's a fraud now again? No, I'm sorry, Senator Ernst.
You're crying out loud.
I'm sorry. Jeff didn't say that. That was me. All right.
But the guys sound alike. It's just guys talking. But here's the thing. It's easier as a member of the U.S. Senate to say the House shouldn't have done that, as opposed to being in the House to actually make that choice. I'm not saying she'd necessarily do anything any differently, but I will tell you that Senator Ernst was not exactly the strongest supporter of the president after the election. I remember having her on the program, and I said something about, this was when, you know, there was still a lot of talk. I mean, this was before the Biden rally on a Saturday night where he claimed victory, saying, well, what do you think about this? There are a lot of people going to Georgia. There are a lot of people going other places. And she said, well, we certainly wish the president well in this effort. I mean, that was as noncommittal as you could possibly get. for a Republican senator who had just gotten reelected, in some part because of Trump voters. So she's not bought into the whole Trump thing from, in essence, from day one. But, yeah, I mean, how many people in the House really stood up? I mean, they did a voice vote, for crying out loud.
Yeah, there's the brave Republicans there. They did a voice vote. They did a voice vote in the first 16 minutes where barely some Republicans even got in the room at that point. And then they quickly got out of there. I mean, it was just a perfect display of cowardice, if you want to know the truth, because – what it is, it's a great lie. They want to make sure, you know, the unwritten rule is that everyone has to be loyal to Trump. But they know that Trump, I mean, as Cheney brought up, the unpopulars that he has in a lot of places, which make winning with him on your side difficult. So they're trying to trying to embrace him while being able to say, oh, well, they didn't really embrace him. Now, Michelle Fischbach up here in 7, she basically said, oh, yeah, no, she did say that her voice vote went against Liz Cheney. But my guess is you're going to find a lot of Republicans right now who are going to be very hesitant to tell you, you know, how they voted. They're just going to say, oh, well, what's done is done. Let's move on. And they're not going to want to admit how they felt about Liz Cheney because they know that that could eventually come back and bite them in the future.
All right. You thought that was a name drop a moment ago. Just buckle up. I was filling in on a program today where they had booked an Arizona congressman, Republican congressman.
Gosar?
And so I –
Was it Gosar?
No.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember who it was right now.
All right.
Give me a second. I'll try. It was Andy Biggs. Andy Biggs.
Oh, not the Biggs. That's a name drop.
I couldn't remember. Couldn't remember who it was. Okay. So anyway – we're doing the interview, and then I said, hey, you were in the room, you know, tell me about it. How'd it go? And, you know, basically, well, you know, we have somebody who represents us. And I finally, I said, if you don't mind me asking, how, you know, as a voice vote, where were you speaking? How was your voice? And he wouldn't definitely say. What he said was, well, I'm the one who engineered the original vote in February to have her ousted, so I think it's pretty clear where I stand. Okay, now I can figure it out.
Yeah.
But even somebody, Matt, who was very clear, and I'm not disrespecting the congressman. He was very clear early on. He wanted her removed from the leadership position and was public about it. So he's not cowering in a corner per se, but even somebody who's been public about it in the past would not say, well, yeah, I voted against her. Wouldn't say that. And that's the problem that they have right now, right? They don't want to say it, but, you know, I mean, I don't know if I voted against her and I was trying to double down with the Trump folks, I'd lead with that. I'd say, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me remove my mask because that's what we do these days. And, oh, by the way, I voted to fire her, Keister. You own it, right?
Yeah. Moderate Republicans. There's some Republicans are saying this is enough's enough, that this loyalty pledge to Trump is too much and that the party needs to move on if they're going to survive.
Okay, but to what?
In 1854, the Whigs, you know, broke apart and the Republican Party came out of them. The problem is back then, those Republicans would be Democrats today. That's the switch in the 1960s when the Civil Rights Movement. So, what you're asking is, would moderate Republicans today really cut the cord and go start their own party? The reality is frankly, and I'm going to be blunt, I think if they did, they'd take a large portion of the Republican voter with them. And I think it's the great lie that we're being told right now beyond the election is that this far-right Trump worshiping is only a small percentage of even the Republican Party, and that if the Republican Party, if the moderate Republicans took their toys and went and started another party, that they would actually, if they got their deal going, if they got their candidates going and their party going, they could actually probably win quite a few seats in 2022.
You have to tear it down before you can build it back up. So to your point, are there enough who have the stomach for it and can say, look, this is what I believe and this is who I am? Now, if those happen to be principles that dovetail with Trump, then okay, but maybe they don't. This has been the issue with so many folks who They like a lot of the Trump policies. They don't like Trump. They don't like the demeanor, et cetera. And so that's led many on that side of the political aisle to say, okay, and they keep mentioning DeSantis. I'm not sure that's the best embodiment of it, but they say, should I have warned you to get your air sick bag before I but true, right? I mean, they keep talking about it. But it comes down to a broader idea of, is there someone who can do the things policy-wise and not have the personal baggage? Well, I don't think they found that person. If they did, then they might just gravitate toward that person as opposed to looking for the blessing from 45.
Well, you know, you had Liz Cheney try to be that person, and she was, you know, summarily run out. I would say this.
She's not the person in the House caucus, but she might still be the person for moderate Republicans.
I will say this. You talked about you have to tear it down before you begin again, unless you do like the Whigs and you just leave and you just go start your own party and say so long, good luck in the future, because it didn't work out too well for the Whigs after that. Let's take a break. Come on back. There had been some testimony about the 1-6 insurrection on Capitol Hill, namely Christopher Miller, the former defense secretary. We'll talk about that when we come on back. Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Jeff Stein joining us. Jeff, Julie actually brings up the point. She thinks Liz is betting Trump will get indicted, which, by the way, is sounding more and more likely here every day. And then his followers will fold, and basically that would open the door for her to run in 2024. You know, if that's the case, I mean, if he ends up getting into big legal trouble, especially in New York, yeah, that, you know, that might end up basically, you know, and he walks away, because that's the real trick here. Unless Trump anoints someone like DeSantis to be the guy that carries his mantle, then the reality is if he just fades away, then there's that vacuum, and Liz Cheney might be looking at that.
I certainly don't think she is. Well, how do I phrase this? This is not to criticize Wyoming. That's their home, wonderful state. But I think she has aspirations that are broader than simply being the congresswoman from the state of Wyoming.
Yeah.
Now, does that running for president in 2024 or 2028, you know, who knows? But she has certainly taken a principled stand. And even those who wanted her out of leadership in the House have been very clear to say she has the right to say whatever she wants to say. She has the right to do it on behalf of Wyoming. Let Wyoming take care of that. But she doesn't have the right to say it in my voice if I'm a member of the House caucus. That's how their theory goes on this. The fact that we're talking now in, what, May of 2021, we're barely past the 100th day of this administration, and we're trying to handicap 2024. Well, holy cow, you want to talk about a lot that can happen between now and then. So from her perspective, she's consistent in terms of her viewpoints. She hasn't done something that she's going to have to answer to. Like, for example, some of these folks, they're going to have to answer for supporting Trump in various ways. She is talking about votes that she took. She's talking about very publicly not liking certain things. Well, there's a level of consistency there. Now, does it help her in Wyoming? Does it help her in 4 years? Does it help her in 6 years? I don't know. But again, I doubt that this is her last stop, in her view.
Her big challenge is going to be winning in 2022 in Wyoming. We'll see if that happens. The hearings on the Capitol insurrection, Christopher Miller, the former defense secretary, was in there. The one major bombshell that he's revealed today, outside of he himself admitted that Trump, you know, was somewhat responsible for the crowd, but he did say Trump had talked to him about the National Guard, and his request was that the National Guard, if it was dispersed. And this was on the 3rd of January. So talking about in advance of this, that he wanted the National Guard there to protect the demonstrators, not any of the buildings. And that is a okay. You mean the people that were, you know, breaking in the building? That was what he was talking about. And of course, we should remind everyone his first video statement after the insurrection was "I love you" to the insurrectionists. So it's, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it just he was clearly trying to set this up to where they could do whatever they wanted to do and even have National Guard protection while they did it.
I really miss your Trump impression, because it's just fabulous. But the smarmy, smoothie little Trump voice thing, that's great. Well, it's one thing to say let's protect human beings. Okay, I mean, nobody would argue with that in a vacuum. But when you put it in the context of everything else, it's hard to avoid the conclusion you just drew, right? I mean, it was a matter of, now you make sure that none of my people, right? Mm-hmm. He may have said, demonstrated, my people get hurt. That whole thing that day, if we actually looked at all of the ways that the system failed, there's a lot to go around, and that's what concerns me more than simply locking up these people. They should have justice administered, certainly. But I think it exposed some systemic things that if we simply say, oh, it was the Trump thing and now Trump's gone, everything's fine. I don't think everything is fine. I think we need to look a little deeper at it and take Trump out of the conversation, because it blurs too many things that could be serious later on.
It does, Trump was not an excuse for their behavior that day, period. Period. I mean, he incited them. He incited them. But, you know, they're beating on cops. They need to pay for that. They shouldn't be able to say, well, I was doing what they did. I'm not buying the Nazi Germany thing. I agree with that.
No. And all I'm saying is that if we simply say it was Trump engineering this and orchestrating it and getting rid of Trump, you won't have a problem again. There are some problems in terms of either chain of command or protection for people in the Capitol, et cetera. We cannot just dismiss those by saying, it was all Trump. And that's all I'm saying, is that we need to not just fool ourselves into thinking, bad orange man out of the room, everything's fine. Because I don't think it is fine. We need to look at some of these systemic things.
Jeff Stein, once again, find his books, Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. We'll spotlight this. Jeff, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you soon. See you, Matt.
Take care. We'll break hour two when we come on back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Matt McNeil Show, Hour 2, here on your Wednesday. 5:05 in the afternoon. An emailer mentioned to me, David Jolly. Jolly or Jolly? J-O-L-L-Y, former congressman from Florida, is apparently trying to start his own political party.
Yeah, I think it's like Save America or something.
Serve America Movement. I'm like, you got to work on that one. Oh, he wants Sam. He wants SAM, Sam.
Oh, yeah.
For God's sake, stop the ad campaign first. You need to do something better with that. He's the chairman of the Serve America Movement. When you look back at the foundation of the Republican Party, it wasn't as if all the people left the Whigs and joined the Republicans. And got to remember, this is in the day and age before telephones, before telegraphs, really. Things kind of worked ergonomically. And so what you ended up having was some regional parties that started to spring up that were in the wake of the Whigs, and then they all eventually merged in, became part of the Republican Party. And so that's kind of how that happened back then. But today, I think you need to have – it would do them wonders if they got up there with all those 100 Republicans yesterday who said they're going to start their own political party. It would do them wonders if they did that and then basically brought up Lynn Cheney and saying, yeah, I'm running as a – Republic Party or whatever it's going to, whatever they'd call themselves. 952-946-6205. Do you want to upset, Brett? Do you want to upset the sports guys in town here?
Oh, absolutely.
today is they're releasing the NFL schedule, and it's for God's sakes.
You're not sitting at home and you don't have an alert on your phone.
I'm not, my face paint is for schedule day, yes. Needless to say, they've released. Tantalizing tidbits to whet your appetite for tonight's big release of the schedule.
They are geniuses at marketing this. I know intentionally the NFL gave rights to a few networks to release a few games that are scheduled, so give them credit. They know how to market.
Well, they're not very good at security, though, because I've got the schedule right here. So, you can listen to the sports guys here in town or the progressive political talk station. We'll let you know. The Bengals are the week one. Cardinals week two. That's a road game. Both of those road games. They open at home against the Seahawks week three. Browns week four at home. Lions week five at home. They're at the Panthers. They got a bye week. Halloween, they take on Halloween night. They got the Dallas Cowboys, the Sunday night game.
Oh, Sunday night. Right.
Ravens on the road. Chargers on the road. Green Bay home on week 11. 49ers on the road. Yikes. Lions on the road. Steelers at home. Bears on the road. Rams at home. Packers on the road. And then Bears to end out. I kind of freaked out a little bit. The Chargers are in there. And I'm like, wait a minute. We're playing the AFC, would be the AFC North. And what it is that they've added a game. Yeah. They've added a game. So now we get one extra AFC game, I guess. Is that really what it is?
Yeah, that's what they did for the 17th game. And they have some formula determining who has to play those neutral site games in Europe. They have some formula.
That's not us, though, this year. Thank God.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can listen to the sports guys in about a little bit here this evening when they release that. Or you can just, you get it right here on Political Talk. We also do occasionally branch out into other things outside of politics, including music. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2021 has been announced on Wednesday. They call it a diverse music class. It's not big. It's six artists recognized this year. The Go-Go's are probably the most, one of the more recognizable bands. I mean, you would not get this because when I was a kid, the Go-Go's came out and that was huge. The Go-Go's, Belinda Carlisle, and the Go-Go's, oh my gosh, they were just massive. And they, you know, and they had, you know, not just their first album, but they have quite a few hits. And, you know, Jane Wheedon, I always liked Rush Hour, the song she did too. Yeah, they're great. They're in now. They are, to date, still only the album by an all-female band that wrote all their songs and played all their instruments to go number one in Billboard Top 200. That's kind of hard to believe that has not been happened since. But the only band, that all-female band, that wrote their songs and played their own instruments to hit number one. Who else is in here? There is, of course, Tina Turner. Is in who won this year's fan vote. Carole King also is in there. How is Carole King not in? My God.
Tina Turner had to have a fan vote to get in?
Well, I mean, I think she just, maybe they just, you know, that's actually a good point. Why would you need a fan vote for Tina Turner? This is why this is so screwed up. I'll get to that in a second here, because there's another thing that really screws up here. Carole King is also in. That makes Tina Turner, Carole King only the second and third female author artist to enter the hall. They both had gone in with their ex-husband, which I'm sure Tina Turner is very happy to be in there with Ike. Yikes. And Jerry Goffin was, of course, with Carole King. Joining the Go-Go's, King and Turner, the hall, they're going to have Todd Rundgren on his third try is in there. The Foo Fighters apparently became eligible. Their first album had to be released in 1995, and that way, that'd be Foo Fighters. And Jay-Z is in. So that they are in there. The shortlisted, they are passed over. Phil Akute, the Afrobeat trailblazer, first wave British metal band Iron Maiden, new wave Mavericks, Devo. These are pit bands that did not make it in. Devo, political 90s alt rockers Rage Against the Machine, New York Dolls, Mary J. Blige did not make it in. Dionne Warwick and Chaka Khan. And here's one of the ones that you just is a crime too, is Kate Bush, the phenomenal artist who quite literally spurned every alternative female artist in the late 80s, 90s, and even today. If you release Kate Bush's The Dreaming from 1985 today, you'd think it's a modern album. It's that good. It's that thick. It's that complex. It is amazing how she's not in there. But, I mean, here's their legacy entry is Kraftwerk. Now, I know you and Patrick here. When I leave, you guys are all about the electronic, the EDM music in this place, man. I can hear the thumping as I leave.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not the – I like some electronic music. I do. These guys in the 1970s, Kraftwerk, formed their own genre of music. Why are they a legacy? You should have those in first time in. I could make an argument. Mary J. Blige should be in. Dionne Warwick should be in. The New York Dolls should be in. Kate Bush should be in. I mean – I can make it, you know, Rage Against the Machine. I don't know.
Yeah.
Devo, I will say this as a guy that went through the early 80s. I'm not saying Devo wasn't an impact on pop culture, but Devo wasn't the Go-Go's. The Go-Go's deserved to go in. Devo was, you know, to a bit kind of a, you know, kind of a trick act. It's like Gary Numan singing Cars, you know, or you know, was it M with pop music? You know, it was kind of a one-time thing. But no, some of these guys, it doesn't make any sense. But that's the Hall of Fame. They just
with any Hall of Fame, essentially what you need, no matter what it is, if it's sports, music, or something else, you need like a Hall of Very Good. The people who are talented but not quite Hall of Fame worthy, where you still want to recognize them. Obviously, you'd need a better name than that, or I don't know.
I think part of the problem you have, though, is that with this Hall of Fame, you're getting so wide of a variance of music genres. Now, what they're not dumb enough. They want everyone to go there. That's kind of what they want everyone to go there. But the problem is that when you're only taking six or seven people each year, and that's including people from the pre 1995 borderline, and then people that just find themselves all of a sudden eligible, like the Foo Fighters and Jay-Z, who are eligible because of 1995 on their first time through, you're going to have massive holes here. And so maybe what you have to do is kind of just look at this and say, all right, maybe we, you know, up this to 10 and get some of these other classic artists in there. I mean, it took Kiss. Kiss took forever to get in there. I talked about Rush. Rush has more gold. The only two artists that have more gold or platinum albums than Rush did were Elvis and the Beatles. And it took them forever to get in there. Now, it's just it's too arbitrary. And I can make it easily. I mean, Jay-Z deserved to be in there? Absolutely. The Foo Fighters, absolutely. They absolutely deserve to be in there. And so this is not pulling someone off the list. I mean, Todd Rundgren. He wrote a lot of songs, so I guess maybe he's okay. I get that. I mean, but yeah, Chaka Khan, come on, man.
You need some sort of criteria. As you said, it's very arbitrary with a lot of Hall of Fames in terms of how you get in. You need, I don't know how you could put out some concrete parameters on how you get in, but yeah, it's very subjective.
Who's your favorite banjo artist that you want to see in there? Well, I will say this. I'm glad they haven't started bringing in. They're leaving Nashville with the country artists.
Yeah.
Is there any rock and roll artist that you can think of that, you know, that whether or not you know they're in there should be in there?
I honestly have no idea who's even actually in the Hall of Fame. I don't pay attention to it that much. Yeah.
I mean, there's some no-brainers. You know, I don't know if you heard of a band called the Beatles.
Well, yeah. obviously, yeah. The Beatles certainly deserve to be in there. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Is there a fringe band that you've always liked that you kind of were wondering, like, are they more popular? Why aren't they more there?
Oh, God, I don't know off the top of my head.
You're a sports guy.
Yeah.
You are. You're a sports guy. There are a few. I will make this. I find it just absurd. And like I said, I'm not the biggest fan of electronic music, but I can look at a group of guys from the 1970s from Germany that were weird as – weird AF. Weird AF. But they started their own entire genre of music. And how do you – okay, so – which is fairly prevalent. Dear Lord, have you been to these desert festivals? They dance like – they're crazed people out there. Shrooms and sunsets and burning things and electronic music. That started with these guys. That sounds like fun, doesn't it?
What a combo.
It's a combo. Who wants to get really sunburned, not remember anything, and ask where, you know, not, you can't park anywhere near there, by the way. Burning Man. And then you have to pick up every piece of trash that comes out with you. As some, you know, software executive, steampunk spider machine goes marching past you as he's going to look for who's got the best shrooms of the place, you know. Welcome to music today, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Go-Go's deserve to get in there as well. I will say that for sure. A lot to get to in regards to the coronavirus update. So let's dive into that. Minnesota rounded up on Wednesday to a COVID-19 vaccination rate of 61%, bringing it closer to its 70% trigger for ending the mask mandate and shielding more people against the pandemic that's caused 7,255 deaths. 590,436 known infections in the state. The last pandemic totals include 15 COVID deaths reported on Wednesday, along with 919 more infections. Minnesota's goal is based on the percentage of people who have received at least a first dose of COVID-19 vaccine. The current rate of 60.7% amounts to nearly 2.7 million eligible people. 16 and older includes nearly 2.2 million people who've completed the one or two dose series. The progress leaves Minnesota 410,485 first doses short of its 70% goal. Come on, people. We got to make some calls here. That will, if you get to 70%, health officials believe that will reduce the number of infections. Governor Walz pledged to end Minnesota's public indoor mask mandate on July 1st or sooner if we can get to that 70%. The governor on Tuesday acknowledged that progress has slowed. The state is seeing a percentage point increase every 3 days a week ago, but that has dropped to 4 days. This is time to work, says Walz, commending the businesses and healthcare organizations that are offering easier access and incentives for vaccinations. The Moderna and Johnson vaccines are available to people 18 and older, while the Pfizer vaccine age cutoff was dropped from 16 to 12 earlier this week by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. They did come through today with the guidance saying that you can get that now. And as a matter of fact, I've got a friend in Minnesota who says that they've already got their appointments for their kids. So you got 12 to 15 years old has not been eligible. There should be eligible now. You should be able to – I'm imagining you're going to be able to start getting appointments. And considering there's a lot of appointments available, that should – you know, we should be able to get that taken care of fairly quickly as well. Guidance for administrating the vaccine for this younger age group is expected Wednesday. They released that earlier today. Minnesota has been declining infections and hospitalizations over the last 4 weeks as the third wave of COVID activity recedes. 15 deaths reported Wednesday included – only one resident of a long-term care facility. They signed the vaccine's effectiveness because of those reasons were prioritized in the initial vaccine doses earlier in this winter. The deaths included Dakota County resident, 40 to 44 years of age. There have been 97 total COVID-19 deaths in Minnesota of people 45 and younger. So that's, you know, something to keep in track of. And this statistic that was put out today, COVID in 12 to 17-year-olds will most likely be in the top 10 causes of death for children. It is if we use 2019 death data that has been presented. So once again, I want to make sure we understand as the people that are out there that have been bad mouthing coronavirus, you know, precautions and trying to say that young people don't get sick and that, like this. Once again, 12 to 17 year olds, COVID in 12 to 17 year olds will likely be a top 10 cause of death for children. If we go back to 2019's death numbers, that would be a top 10 cause of death. And can you tell me right now that if we were to start a year out and say, oh my God, we got to do something to stop what will be a top 10 killer of 12 to 17-year-olds in the state of Minnesota, would anyone have said, oh, no, we can't do that? No, of course, everyone would have been on board. But because of the freaking Republicans and the way the Republicans act, you know, it's just, for goodness sakes, we're trying to save people's lives here. We're trying to save people's lives. Speaking of which, the Mayo Clinic has a new study out. I'm going to get to this when we come on back. It's a little bleak here about the long-term effects of coronavirus. I'll get to that as well. Your phone calls to 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Let's run through the arguments we've had to deal with. Don't wear a face mask. It doesn't help. You know, you had to deal with that. Still have to deal with that. Fools. Vaccines got microchips in them. Oh. Have you been vaccinated yet?
I have, yep. I am fully vaccinated.
Wasn't it great when Bill Gates took over your body and just had you to kind of, you know, I was dancing for him. He took over my body with that microchip, but I just started dancing. Because that's how technology works. You get one microchip in you, and there it is. I'm a dancing fool for Jeff Bezos.
Yes, I have been racking up a lot of credit card debt on Microsoft products. So,
oh, yeah, they reeled you in on that. That was well before the pandemic.
No so, microchip needed for that. Yeah, just
give me more technology. So we've had to deal with the vaccines are going to kill us all. Although, I mean, do they realize like 250 million of us have been vaccinated right now and we're all, for the most part, still alive? I mean, seriously, it's, you'd think that's going to kick in at some point, but heaven forbid the truth ever actually get in the way of what you want to think.
Yeah. I've never gotten that. How all of these bad things people say about the vaccines and there's no widespread microchips being inserted or no widespread people dying.
It got dark. It got dark. The only people dying are old people. And? Like, they don't deserve to be kept alive, for God's sakes? You know, it's very, very Monty Python, you know, bring out your dead sort of thing, you know. Not dead yet. Yeah, he's on the way. Last legs. Take him off. Yeah, for goodness sakes. Yeah, you're the people on the right that, remember, that was, and don't let them forget that. That was about 3 months. That was April, May, June last year. Oh, it's just old people dying. So old people die. I mean, it's not ideal, but who cares?
What was it? The lieutenant governor of Texas said, well, we got to make some sacrifices, and if that means we lose a few of our senior citizens, so be it.
So be it. We've had the kids. Oh, kids don't get sick. Well, yeah, once again, what's the statistic that just came on out? That if we use 2019's numbers right now, there would be more people who would have died from COVID in the 12 to 17 range. It would be a top 10 killer of kids in Minnesota. Think about that. And then we also have this false idea. It's just the flu. It's just the flu. I cough a few days, and then I go back to work. Uh-uh. Not really. And we have talked about this since I think we started seeing the stories in July of last year where medical professionals would say, whoa, this might not be a one-and-done sort of situation, that this disease can give you long-term health effects. Now, a new study published by the Mayo Clinic into the effects of long COVID found many sufferers dealing with severe negative impacts long after the initial infection. The study released Wednesday morning looked at the first 100 patients enrolled in the program at the clinic for prolonged COVID symptoms, often referred to as long COVID. The patients were studied between June 1st and December 31st of last year. Many participants were under the age of 65. 68% were female. 75% had experienced initial COVID symptoms that were mild enough to avoid being admitted to the hospital. The majority did not have pre-existing conditions. So once again, no pre-existing conditions for most of them. Many of them, minor symptoms, not needing hospitalization. Yet weeks and months later, many reported continuing symptoms from COVID, including fatigue. 80% of the patients reported that. Respiratory complaints, 59%. More than half noted they still had trouble thinking, a symptom once called brain fog. Sleep disturbance, mental health problems were also reported, and were neurological issues such as headaches, dizziness, fluctuating heart rate or blood pressure, and more. Most patients with whom we have worked required physical therapy, occupational therapy, or brain rehabilitation to address the perceived cognitive impairment, said Dr. Greg. I'm not even going to try that last name. Dr. Greg, an MD medical over the Mayo Clinic's COVID-19 activity rehabilitation program. These symptoms resulted in significant negative effects as the person tried to resume a normal life. Yeah, of course. Once again, fatigue, respiratory complaints, trouble thinking, sleep disturbance, mental health problems, neurological issues. More than one-third of the patients said they had difficulty performing daily tasks. Two in every three participants still had not been able to return to unrestricted work duties at the time of the analysis. Wow. As the pandemic continues, we expect to see more patients who experience symptoms long after infection. Healthcare providers need to prepare for this and know what to look for and know how to best provide for their patients and needs. Especially, I'm wondering how many people are going to have, because they were never diagnosed with coronavirus, are going to have this mysterious respiratory illness, brain fog, you know, fatigue, respiratory problems long down the road. I'm going to go back to what we here at this station were saying. It wasn't just me. Brett was saying this. Many of the hosts were saying this. I don't want you to die. We don't want you to get sick. And we sure as heck don't want you to get sick, because it sure is looking like there are long-term consequences for this. So on one side of the political aisle, you have people who are out there selfish and greedy, basically demanding the world open because I want to go to a movie, or I want to go to a concert, or I want to go get chicken wings at a sports bar. And we are taking it seriously and trying and begging and pleading with people, for God's sakes, take this seriously. And the last I checked in the report I just gave, 919 new coronavirus cases today. 15 more deaths today. This is not over, people. Get vaccinated. Wear a mask. Socially distance. Try your hardest to not get sick, because the last thing you want is those chicken wings or that movie that you went to or that concert that you went to be the cause of years, years of physical and mental distress, because that is what we're looking at thanks to coronavirus. On top of the story of the fact that we're more than likely this is the biggest killer in the history of this country. It's a shame. It's an absolute shame that people became more convinced on playing politics with this issue than taking it seriously. And, you know, and there are still some people today that are just determined to no matter what, prove that what they think in their mind is right. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Get vaccinated. Please, people, get vaccinated. 952-946-6205. Dave is in Eagan, kind enough to join us. Hey, Dave, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good.
What's on your mind?
Hello.
What's on your mind, my friend?
So, I think I had COVID and our whole office had it probably February last year. And as far as the effects of long COVID, I definitely think I've felt it. I don't think any of us ever got properly diagnosed. Only my boss went to the doctor and they gave him a steroid stew similar to the president got, maybe not quite as good. But the brain fog and the general lethargy. I got a family vacation every June, and that whole vacation I was just knocked out. I didn't want to do nothing. I had the brain fog. I couldn't, think too far, too many steps ahead. And it's really only about now, this spring, that I'm starting to feel like back to baseline.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're having any continual problems now, perchance?
You know, it's hard to say. I got my first jab, the first half of Moderna, the other week. I'm going to get my second one soon.
Good.
But as far as the brain fog, I'm getting better. Don't really have the constant just lethargy, not wanting to do anything. Like depression without the sadness.
Yeah. Well, Dave, one thing I think you are spot on, and all my best. I hope you heal up well and get that second shot, and thank you very much for the phone call. One of the things that I think he's right about is I have started to become more convinced that this was actually far more prevalent in this country earlier than it was. It's just that people were just not prepared to diagnose it, and it was in February. So people said, oh, he's just got the flu, and that was kind of the easy thing. And the reality is I had people – I know multiple people who in February and in March of last year were really, really sick. And they said it was the flu, but it was like nothing they ever had. But, you know, we didn't really start diagnosing it on a larger scale until really late March, early April, correct?
I'm in that boat too, where I had just a weird thing in February of 2020 where I just had a cough and a sore throat and nothing else. And I've never had anything like that. And I kind of wonder if I did when I got my shot, I had some side effects. So who knows? But I think there's a lot of people that you're saying that probably had it that were never diagnosed early in the pandemic.
Not only do you have that, I mean, I've talked about my friend and I don't want to get too much into details because obviously I want to concern about his privacy. But I'm going to say this. He's had a lot of complications with his COVID. It's starting to look better. It is starting to get better. And I'm very glad there. But he's going to have a lifetime of health complications that are going to go along with this, because of this. This is not – you don't want to mess around with this. And I understand chicken wings, movie theaters, but come on, stupidity. Selfishness and greed are not virtues, people. They're just not. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. An interesting story from Blue Stem Prairie today. On his Facebook page, Darren Slater posted a prayer request on May 7th. A screenshot is on the page here of the story. Slater may live a bit of a double life if the charges he's facing in Hudson, Wisconsin, an earlier infraction in New Brighton are examined. He is an African-American conservative who served as director of Minnesota chapter of Blexit in 2020, is a frequent defender of law enforcement officers, critic of men who were killed by police, such as George Floyd and Dante Wright. He attended the January 6th pro-Trump rally in Washington, D.C., but it's unclear whether he entered the Capitol. Unicorn Riot reported in the D.C. riots, look at the Minnesota contingent. Slater has also appeared in public We Are People gatherings in Waldorf, Owatonna, Rochester, Blooming Prairie with Minnesota House members Jeremy Munson, John Petersburg, Peggy Bennett, and Patty Mueller. Republican gubernatorial candidate Scott Jensen also appeared at the Blooming Prairie event and has a tweet, a screenshot of him posing with this individual. With Darren Slater. Well, he's posted dozens of videos on his Facebook page. He's followed by 34,000 people, yet in two encounters with law enforcement officers, the conservative activist has been a little less respectful. Slater, whose full name is Tory Darren Slater, is scheduled for a preliminary hearing on Wednesday, May 12th, today, according to the St. Croix, Wisconsin court case number. He was arraigned today. According to the criminal complaint, on the early morning of April 8th, Hudson police officer Max Berger was called to assist fellow officers Rue and Woodward, who were involved in an active fight in the street outside of Dick's Bar. Well, Wisconsin, you can't. There you go. You crossed into Wisconsin. The cops are fighting with someone in the street like it's a 1910s burglary. The prime approximately 2:36 a.m. Good morning, Hudson. Good morning. That would put three officers on the street with four folks engaged and attempted a fist fight in the street. As the criminal complaint states, Officer Berger approached Slater and asked him what he was going on. Slater took a fighting stance, clenched his fist, and stared. Slater called the officer a bad word and a derogatory term for someone else and slated that he would beat him up and that Berger didn't know who he was. Well, that's going to go over well. As Officer Woodward had thought he had seen a firearm on Slater, Berger handcuffed Slater until the other officers located who had the firearm. Slater, who was not carrying the firearm, told Berger that he would shoot the blank out of you. And wouldn't answer whether he was carrying a firearm. Slater also told Berger he was done, referring to, I'm presuming, his career. In the public speaking arrangements, most recently, so it doesn't sound like that was going well that evening. And, less than friendly conversation. In public speaking engagements, most recently in Blooming Prairie, Slater was claimed that he didn't know the police officer was a cop and that the liberal with a gun threatened him. The skinny version from Facebook on May 7th, fighting with a libtard with a firearm, and I threatened a cop not knowing he was a cop, but another combatant. We're a little skeptical about the notion that none of the three officers on the scene in Hudson wore uniforms or identified themselves as police officers, especially the fellow placing Slater in the handcuffs. I don't know about you. That's not something that happens to me on a regular basis. Just like, uh-oh, handcuffs again. Here we are. Is that a cop doing it? Well, is this a sex blimp? Is this a sex blimp, finally? We have our sex blimps? No?
I'm going to wrap my head around this series.
He tries to fight the cop. Then he says, we were a bit skeptical about the notion that one of the three officers on the scene in Hudson wore uniforms and identifying features. If Mr. Slater wants to respect law enforcement, maybe he needs to start seeing officers. And by the way, yes, all officers on the scene, we're wearing their police uniforms. The complaint against Mr. Paul Vang, who apparently holds a permit to carry but not the sense to stay sober while doing so, he was the guy apparently that he was fighting with. The document includes details about Slater threatening Berger, which Officer Woodward also heard. They contacted Mr. Slater's lawyer for comment in the case, but received no answer from the attorney or Mr. Slater. Should we receive a reply, we'll update the post. And we recommend the readers, they avoid engaging in street fights outside of bars in Hudson, Wisconsin, whether or not they're carrying an argument about politics. We also commend the Houston police officers, Hudson police officers, for doing their jobs without harming Mr. Slater or Mr. Vang, who is drunk with a gun. We should make sure we mention that. That idiot. Now, it's you know, it should be mentioned that as this happens, Darren Slater has posted such things as, I'm so sick of our police officers getting disrespected. The is another arrest, though. We first discovered Mr. Slater's February 5th arrest, a synopsis of some of the incidents. Since the case was an open one, it's not searchable in defendant's name and online Minnesota records, but we're able to obtain the case number by calling Ramsey County Court. Like I said, good journalists, they know what they're doing. So on February 5th, here is the February 5th, 10:47 p.m., New Brighton police officers were on patrol when they observed a vehicle in the parking lot of LA Fitness located at 1101 Silver Lake Road, New Brighton, Ramsey County, Minnesota. Officers observed an unconscious male in the driver's seat, and the vehicle was running. The driver, who later identified as Tory Darren Slater, was immediately aggressive when he woke to officers knocking on the window. Slater's breath emitted an odor of alcohol, and his speech was slurred. His eyes were bloodshot. Slater refused to take a field sobriety test. Slater was transported to New Brighton Police Department, where Officer Clark attempted multiple times to read him in the breath test advisory. Slater continuously interrupted and would not listen to the officer Clark. Slater stated that he had asthma, emphysema, and COPD that caused him to have issues with his lungs. When given the opportunity to contact his attorney, Slater did not make any attempts to contact one. Slater was hostile to officers, stating, "We'll meet up again once this is done," and he was part of the Chicago Mafia. He showed pre-attack indicators such as belled up fists and stared down officers through his arrest. Slater agreed to take a breath test, but only pretended to blow into the machine. He's like, this guy, is this guy from Wisconsin? Because he's pulling in all the Wisconsin tricks at this point. And would not provide a strong enough breath to register the machine. Slater was told multiple times that by not stumbling into a valid test, it was a crime. After each sample, the machine would time out because Slater did not blow long enough. Officer Clark took his test as a test refusal. So here you have a guy who is we all have our right to follow whatever politics we want. And as an African-American man, a black man, he has taken the side of a defender of law enforcement, and he's challenged George Floyd, Dante Wright. And this has gotten him access. He's, you know, appeared on stages with politicians, including, Scott Jensen. And he basically, has gone out there and made posts that, hey, support police. Don't disrespect the police officers. And here we have, an open fight in Hudson, as well as also the case in New Brighton. And I think we can have let me touch on the New Brighton thing really quick. I find it under the same guise as this. Here's the problem. The car was running. If they came up to that car, the car wasn't running, he was asleep in the car, I'm of the mindset of, to avoid another Dante Wright situation, just let him sleep. As long as you let the people know at the LA Fitness, hey, here's the deal. There's a guy out here who's asleep. His car's not running. You just let him sleep off. If there's a problem, give us a call. Done. If the fact that his car was running, though, that's when you get into DWI, and that's, and that becomes a little bit of a problem. And the belligerence, the lack of respect for the process once you've been caught doing something, not exactly ensuring, but it's the fact that a Hudson cop walks up to him. This is like that's like a story like we're your buddies. Oh, man, you're not going to believe what happened, man. Went out to Hudson. We decided to get a little ripped up. And there's these guys are being jerks. So we took it out in the street. And this one guy starts, he wants to fight the cop. I couldn't believe it.
It's like a screenplay for a comedy scene in a like a Hangover sequel.
There's going to be more on this to come. It doesn't surprise me that you have people that get somewhat a little bit morally bankrupt and that are attached to the Republican Party. It doesn't surprise me. By the way, this is not the first time that Slater claimed he was Chicago Mafia, although we have found no evidence that he was a member of the outfit. In some public events on social media, Slater has claimed that he was a member of a violent street gang and that a sympathetic woman judge gave him a second chance. Judging by the disposition of the last serious court case in Minnesota, we've obtained the relevant court documents which involve a death serious enough to threaten a neighbor and ex-girlfriend. The plea was entered and accepted. The judge asked that he attend domestic abuse counseling and other conditions. Slater found God, and it seems like there have been some law-abiding citizens until this year, he's even had a stint working for the Adult Teen Challenge, which is a great organization. But the claims of being reformed street gang member and drug dealer or current Chicago Mafia made man are not supported by the court case file here in Minnesota or in Iowa. So, yeah, obviously this guy's got some issues. And we've got a picture of him. And you got to see the picture. Look at Scott Jensen's smile. Look at Dr. Scott. Just happy to be right now. There you go. Was Scott Jensen fighting on the streets of Hudson, Wisconsin? Can I ask that question? Was he part of that melee? Oh, my God. If that was only true. It's not true. I'm just asked a speculation. But if it was true, mwah! Oh, it would brighten it, make sunshine every day for a while. I highly doubt it was. But we should find out who his buddy was that was fighting on the streets of Hudson, Wisconsin. Who else? What other Republicans has he appeared with? Hey, Jeremy Munson. What do you know? Dr. Jeremy Munson. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A ruling by Cahill in the Chauvin case. We'll talk about that when we come back as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Sad news. Former Vikings coach Jerry Burns has passed away. 94. Nice run. 94 years old, passed away. That's just coming across here from Bring Me the News. So all our best to his family and all the Vikings organization out there. A Minnesota judge has ruled that there are aggravated factors in the death of George Floyd, paving the way for the possibility of a longer sentence for Derek Chauvin, according to the order made public on Wednesday. In his ruling dated on Tuesday, Judge Peter Cahill found Chauvin abused his authority as a police officer when he restrained Floyd last year and that he treated Floyd with particular cruelty. He also cited the presence of children and the fact Chauvin was part of a group with at least three other people. Cahill said Chauvin and two other officers held Floyd handcuffed in a prone position in the street for an inordinate amount of time and that Chauvin knew the restraint was dangerous. The prolonged use of this technique was particularly egregious is that George Floyd made it clear he was unable to breathe and expressed the view that he was dying as a result of the officer's restraint. Cahill wrote, even with the aggravated factors, legal experts have said Chauvin, 45, isn't likely to get more than 30 years when he's sentenced to June 25th. Well, he's going to get 30. If he gets 30 years there, the federal case is going to get him probably another 15. At that point, he's going to be 90 years old. And if he makes it that long, fine, release him. But, put him in jail. Yeah, I don't care. 30 years, give him as much as you can. Ben Crump and the team of attorneys representing Floyd's family applauded the ruling, say it's a statement that offers hope that we still can see real change in the relationship between the police and people of color by holding officers properly accountable for egregious behavior and for failing the honor and the sanctity of our lives. Chauvin, who is white, was convicted in April of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter for pressing his knee against Floyd's neck for about 9 minutes and 9.5 minutes as the black man said he couldn't breathe and went motionless. Even though Cahill was found guilty on three counts under Minnesota statutes, he's only be sentenced on the most serious one, the second-degree murder under Minnesota sentencing guidelines. He would have faced a presumptive sentence of 12 and a half years in the court, as Cahill could have been sentenced him for as little as 10 years and 8 months or as much as 15 years. But prosecutors asked that for what is known for upward departure, arguing that Floyd was particularly vulnerable with his hands cupped behind his back as he was laying face down on Chicago Avenue. They also said Chauvin treated Floyd with particular cruelty, saying Chauvin inflicted gratuitous pain and caused psychological distress to Floyd and to bystanders. They also said Chauvin abused his position of authority as police officer, committed his crime as part of a group of three or more people, and that he pinned Floyd down in the presence of children, including a 9-year-old girl who testified that watching the restraint made her sad and kind of mad. Cahill agreed that with all but one of the prosecutor's arguments, he said the prosecution did not prove that Floyd was particularly vulnerable, noting that even though he was handcuffed, he was still able to struggle with officers who were trying to get him into the squad car. Whatever. But it's the right call. Put him in jail for 30 years. Let the feds take him for the next 15 to 20, and then, yeah, that's it. We're done. And, it is... Right now, it's interesting. As this case is done, there's the other story that came on out that apparently there's the workers' comp claims of the retiring police officers, the police officers that are leaving the force, and there's apparently a lot of them that are leaving Minneapolis Police Force, and they're claiming workers' comp, and apparently that's up to like $30 million worth of claims that have been filed against the city. I'm going to say this again to all the Minneapolis Police Department out there, because I don't have any patience for this crap. If you're so angry because Derek Chauvin was finally found accountable for his actions, so much dude's like, I'm going to leave. Go. Seriously. Bye. So long. Bon voyage. Get your ass out. Because frankly, you're not part of the solution. You're part of the problem. Because if you can't look at what that dude did and say, wow, that was crossing a line, and if you had the intent to protect and serve, that you would say to yourself, I'm going to stay on this police force and redeem Minneapolis police. I'm going to show the people that that's not who we are, that we are better than that. That is not the police department that this is, that we are a better police department. If you can't do that, then go and leave and be done with that, okay? It is, to me, inexcusable that in the wake of what we have seen in that trial and those very quick guilty verdicts, you still have police officers who are trying desperately to turn themselves into victims. And, poor us, we can't do what we used to do all the time. They don't appreciate us kneeling on the back of their necks. No, we don't. No, we sure as hell do not. And if, like I said, if you have any feelings that things should go back to the way they were, well, then get out. Bye. So long. We're going to be better off without you. Native Roots Radio up next. Have a good one. We are back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.